thank you all for being here and for worshiping with us. And I'm really excited about sharing with you here this morning. I love the modern technology and the Google searches and all that stuff. And as I was watching the screen, as Seth was reading the scripture, I kept seeing the name of our man today, our main character in our message today. And you know, you learn a lot about Pilates when you do Google searches for Pilate. And so I know a lot more about Pilates now than I ever did before. And I kept saying, nope, that is not who I'm looking for, you know. Thank you for being here. And I love that passage. I love this passage that we're talking about here this morning, too. Because, you know, as much as I have read the Easter story, and as much as I have studied, and as many times as I have learned about and talked about these different, like, these different key players in this Easter story, I've learned to grow just a little closer to these characters. And so Gus kicked off our sermon series, Unnecessary, last week, and I hope that you understand what we're praying and planning to do here and to lead you through. We joke about this. It's not an unnecessary series. It's a series about unnecessary things, because what we're hoping to show you is that no matter how much people, Gus talked about this last week, no matter how much people would be against this happening, and all of the, you remember with Peter and with Malchus and all that stuff, no matter how much power they had, they couldn't stop it. It was unnecessary. And today we're talking about no matter whose opinion outside of Pilate and these key people, no matter whose opinion it was that this should be stopped, that was unnecessary. And we're going to be talking about next week about how no matter how much his followers prepared and planned for his burial, guess what? It was unnecessary. It was unnecessary. And so that's what we're hoping to show you in these 3 weeks. And I think Gus did a good job of showing us last Sunday that all the effort and all of the aggression, all of the scheming and plotting and that stuff had no chance whatsoever of stopping what was happening. Because after all of that happened, that night in the Garden of Gethsemane, with Judas's betrayal and with Peter cutting off his ear and Jesus healing the man again, Jesus is still arrested. And he's brought before the high priest in the outside courtyard where the Jewish leaders and the elders have already gathered. The same story in Matthew describes, I think, in a little better detail, so I want to read this to you, if you would, please. Then those who had seized Jesus led him to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders had gathered. And Peter was following him at a distance, as far as the courtyard of the high priest. And going inside, he sat with the guards to see the end. Now the chief priests and the whole council were seeking false testimony against Jesus, that they might put him to death. But they found none, though many false witnesses came forward. At last, two men came forward and said, "This man said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and to rebuild it in 3 days.'" And the high priest stood up and he said, "Have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you?" But Jesus remained silent. And the high priest said to him, "I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God." And Jesus said to him, "You have said so. But I tell you, from now on you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his robes and he said, "As he has uttered blasphemy, what further witnesses do we need? You have now heard his blasphemy. What is your judgment?" They answered, "He deserves death." And then they spit in his face and they struck him. And some slapped him, saying, "Prophesy to us, you Christ, who is it that struck you?" And the next morning, Matthew chapter 27 tells us that all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And they bound him and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate, the governor. So enter character two. One of the seemingly main characters in our story this morning is this prefect or this governor of Judea, Pontius Pilate. Most historians said that his reign or his office, I guess, of of governor would have been from 26 AD to 36 AD. And so by the time of our story here this morning, Pilate may have been the governor for about 6 or 7 years at this point. I want to make a little sales pitch. If you haven't seen this yet, the History Channel, a few weeks ago, it was the week we were in spring break, and so it's been about 3 weeks ago now, I guess. But the History Channel released this mini series, and it is incredible. If you haven't had a chance yet to check it out, it's called Jesus, His Life, and what I love about it, they have sought the counsel and the wisdom of lots of very, very smart people. They well-known isn't always a good thing to say, but very intellectual church leaders, very intellectual college, university professors, historians, theologians. They've sought the wisdom of lots of people to talk about these different aspects of Jesus' life, his ministry, the judgment, his arrest, all of this stuff, and it's just an amazing miniseries. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, and Heather and I caught it, actually this episode, and I said, oh Lord, you love me, you love me, because this episode about Pilate came on this week while we were watching, scrolling through channels. But you can also, if you don't want to wait for it to show on a rerun, you can get it on iTunes as well. And I'm telling you, it's worth $3 or $4 per episode to download it to your. It's an amazing thing. But one of the things that I love about the show is because it shows you some interactions, and I'll make this statement: they're extra biblical. But they could be true. And so I love the interactions that with Pilate and Caiaphas and all that. But so we don't just have resources like that, but we also have a recorded record of written words of there's a first century author and historian, and Gus and I have talked about him before. You may have heard his name before, but the man's name is Flavius Josephus. And he wrote about some of these very events. He wrote multiple works, but one is called The Antiquity of the Jews. And he writes about some of these very events. And the reason that I wanted to bring Josephus into this story here today is because I think that it, as if the Bible needs any back, it adds some credibility to the times and the places and the people. Does that make sense? To hear of another first century author that's writing about these very things. And so Josephus tells us about Pilate in some detail. And so Josephus said that Pilate's main residence would not have been in the city of Jerusalem, but instead he would have been up on the Mediterranean coast in Caesarea Maritima. Pilate's main job was to keep the peace, the Pax Romana, the peace of Rome, all right? He was to keep order in Judea, but also in the city of Jerusalem. And I thought this was quite ironic that they chose Pilate to be a peacekeeper, because Pilate was not well known. That would not have been his middle name. Pilate was known to be very violent and a very strong, well-feared military man, very vicious man. And there are several accounts that we have of Pilate ruling with an iron fist and putting lots of people to death who had just crossed him wrongly. And so his job was to keep order in all of Judea, but especially also in Jerusalem, the capital city. All right, most of the time he was going to be doing this through the collecting of taxes. And let me just say this real quick: if you haven't done your taxes yet, tomorrow is going to be a bad day for you. But so Pilate, that was his job mostly, was to collect the taxes and to keep order in the city. And so so at this time in this place in our story this morning, Pilate and his army are in Jerusalem, and they're there to keep order in the city, which would have been quite a responsibility. I read some different historical records and some different censuses and stuff that talked about how many people would have been in Jerusalem, just in general. But everybody agreed that during the annual festivals, that the city, the population of the city would have been three times its normal number, easily. And even in this particular festival, the festival of Passover. Jerusalem would have been busting, it seems. And I love God's timing in all of this. It's because of the Passover that Pilate would have been in Jerusalem at this time. And he obviously, at least outwardly, he seems to play a pretty important role in our story today. Back to the History Channel miniseries real quick, because one thing that really stuck out to me, and it never hit me before, but as I watched this episode about Judas' betrayal, Jesus' arrest, Pilate's judgment, when Caiaphas and the Jewish leaders bring Jesus to Pilate for his judgment, Pilate tells Caiaphas, and we have a biblical record of this too, so we know this is true, but Pilate's response to Caiaphas was, "I want nothing to do with this man. Why don't you and your people just handle this situation yourself?" And Caiaphas' response, and as I watched it on this show, Caiaphas' response to Pilate is, "You need to make the judgment because we have no authority to execute him." And Pilate was kind of taken back to execute him because, this is an interesting thing, I thought anyway, because as violent as Pilate was, as vicious of a man as he was, but executing Jesus was the last thing on his mind. Why would you be putting him to death? What has Jesus done to justify executing him? And I love this part of the story because even though it looks like these men, Caiaphas, the Sanhedrin, the Jewish leaders, even though it looks like these men are the ones in power, history had already spoken on this. And prophecy had already spoken on this, that Jesus would not die at the hands of the Jewish people. The book of Psalms and Zechariah, Isaiah, all predict different elements of Jesus' suffering and death. In Psalm chapter 22, verse 1, David writes these words, my God, why have you forsaken me? You've heard that before, haven't you? It was written thousands of years before. Why are you so far from saving me, from the words of my groaning? And in verses 7 and 8 in that same chapter, David writes, all who see me mock me. They make mouths at me. They wag their heads. They say, he trusts in the Lord. Let him deliver him. Let him rescue him, for he delights in him. And in verses 16 through 18 in that same passage, it says, for dogs encompass me. And many people thought that, that word dogs was a term for the non-Jewish people, the Gentiles. Dogs encompass me, he says. A company of evildoers encircles me. They've pierced my hands and feet. I can count all my bones. They stare and they gloat over me. They divide my garments among me, and for my clothing they cast lots. And another prophecy, maybe one of the most well-known verses about Jesus' death, and one that Gus reminded us of last Sunday, is Isaiah 53:5. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. History had already been written. This story had already been written. And even during this very festival, the Passover, Jesus would fulfill the whole prophecy that this feast was even all about. If you don't remember, look it up sometime here real soon. But in the book of Exodus, right before the Israelites finally are leaving the land of Egypt, they were to each take a lamb, one per household. And then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the door frame of the house in which they eat. And then the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day for you will be a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations as a statute forever, and shall keep it as a feast. So as high and mighty as these men, Caiaphas and the rest of the leaders of Jerusalem, the Sanhedrin, as high and mighty as they thought they were, their opinion was absolutely unnecessary. The story had already been written long ago. If you're following along in the program, this is our first fill-in in the sermon outline, is that the gang's opinion was unnecessary. I call them the gang because that's exactly what they were. It was a group mentality. It was a riot mentality. These men, the religious leaders, were not good men. They were not good men, and so the gang's opinion was unnecessary. They were breaking their own rules. By their own law, they weren't supposed to hold court or to accuse anyone at night, and that's exactly what they did. That very same night that Gus told us about last week, Jesus had been betrayed and was arrested in the garden, and Luke tells us that day that they built a fire in the courtyard of the high priest's house, and the men who were holding Jesus mocked him and beat him and blindfolded and blasphemed him. They had already held court, and they broke their own laws doing it. And that's where we pick up back up with Pilate's involvement. And so by the time that they take Jesus to Pilate in the palace early the next morning, which, by the way, they themselves wouldn't enter. They wouldn't enter the palace that day because they had already, listen to the irony of this thing here. They wouldn't go into the palace because they had already been ceremonially cleansed for the Passover. They're taking Jesus to Pilate, but they've already been cleansed, and they don't want to be unclean by going into the palace themselves. I just scratch my head sometimes about that. But by this time, they had already passed their own judgment as they take them to Pilate, as they take Jesus to Pilate. Remember what I read from Matthew chapter 27, that all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death, and they bound him, and they led him away, and they delivered him over to Pilate, their governor. And their plea to him in verse 2 of our passage said this. Seth read this for us just a few minutes ago. We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute or to pay taxes to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. They already knew that Pilate wasn't going to care about any of this stuff. They knew that Pilate couldn't care less about their Jewish laws and their Jewish customs. But if they could convince Pilate that Jesus might cause an uproar in the city, if they could convince Pilate that he might cause some kind of trouble against the temple or against the government, now that might catch his attention. And so they brought Jesus to Pilate early in the morning. And that in and of itself, think about what kind of a man that Pilate is. They interrupt him early in the morning. He was a violent man. And he was a vicious man. And he could have had someone put to death in a second. And that's what they were hoping that Pilate would do. But Pilate, quite frankly, wasn't that impressed. Jesus didn't seem to him like a man who would cause an uproar in the city. He didn't seem to him like a man who would stage a government overthrow like these men were saying that he would. And Jesus, to Pilate, Jesus didn't seem like the kind of man that could tear down the temple and rebuild it in 3 days like he himself said he would. And all of those things would have been of great concern to Pilate, being the appointed peacekeeper of Jerusalem. But none of those things seemed to concern him at all. In fact, this whole thing showed itself to Pilate as exactly what it was. He knew that this was a personal vendetta. He knew that this was a personal issue that these men had against Jesus. Matthew tells us that Pilate knew that these men had brought Jesus to him out of their own envy. And he didn't want anything to do with it at all. But you see, it didn't matter what he wanted. It didn't matter what Pilate thought. If you're following along, this is the second point in our outline this morning, is that the government's opinion was totally unnecessary as well. Even though they kept pressing him, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee and even to this place. Oh, now something had caught his attention. Pilate finally heard something from these men that he liked, that pleased him. Jesus was from Galilee. And verse 7 tells us that when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself also in Jerusalem at the time, for the Passover. Now we know something of this man, Herod. And Jesus also knew something of this man, Herod. Herod Antipas. Some referred to him as Herod the Tetrarch. But this was the same Herod that had John the Baptist beheaded. And Jesus didn't like Jesus didn't like Herod very well. So here again, here's another situation that could have ended very badly for Jesus. In fact, that's what Pilate was hoping would happen, that by soliciting the outside opinion of Herod, that this problem that Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin had brought to him, this man Jesus, would finally be off his plate. And he would let Herod take care of the situation. Because, see, he knew that if Herod would find Jesus to be a military threat, or that if he found him to be any threat at all to the government, that he would render his judgment, and the problem would be out of his hands for good. But Herod wasn't upset at all that Pilate sent Jesus to him. In fact, Herod was happy that Pilate sent Jesus to him because Herod had been wanting to see him because he was hoping that Jesus would perform some kind of miracle for him. But he didn't. And so Herod questioned him. Jesus said nothing. The chief priests and the scribes are standing by arguing and yelling, you know, for Herod to pass some kind of judgment. But he wouldn't. But Herod and his soldiers treated him with contempt, our scripture says, and mocked him, and then arraying him in splendid clothing. They put the king's robes on him, sent him back to Pilate. So Pilate, thinking that he might send Jesus to his own people to judge him, get the problem off of his own plate, that didn't get rid of the problem. Herod found no issue at all with Jesus. And he also, just like Pilate, found no reason for Jesus to be put to death, even though the chief priests and the other religious leaders stood by strongly, vehemently accusing him. But just like all the others, Galilee's opinion was unnecessary. And you see, the reason that Galilee's opinion was unnecessary is because ultimately, Jesus wasn't from Galilee. You know that. I know that. Jesus wasn't ultimately from Galilee. And ultimately, Jesus' kingship wasn't a threat to Herod's kingship at all. John tells us, so Pilate entered his headquarters again, and he called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus answered him, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did somebody else tell you about me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and your own chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" And Jesus' answer, and I love this answer, it's so profound. Jesus says, "Those people are not my people. My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting for me that I might not be delivered over to the Jews, but my kingdom is not from this world." And then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king then?" And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king, and for this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into this world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." And so Jesus is saying, this is not my kingdom. My kingdom is elsewhere. The way that Jesus would save his people from their sins was not with physical force and violent tempers and all that stuff. It wasn't a physical battle. So Pilate once again addresses the angry crowd of religious leaders. "You brought me this man as one who is misleading the people. I've examined him before you, and behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. And neither did Herod, by the way, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore punish him and will release him." But you see, no matter what his opinion was, no matter what Pilate thought about Jesus, he would do it. He would do it. Pilate telling Jesus, "Look, I have power here." Pilate said, "Look, I can save you or I can crucify you." You know what? That very statement showed that Pilate really didn't know who Jesus was. And he did not realize Jesus' real purpose in any of this. Because see, no matter how many times that Pilate tried to pass the buck back to the Jewish leaders, on to King Herod, no matter how many times he tried to seek other people's opinions, he would do it. He would do it, even though he literally, physically washed his hands of the whole situation. And he said he would have nothing to do with Jesus' death. He still would. He still would, because his opinion didn't matter. We called this message this morning unnecessary solicitation of outside opinion. And the truth is that this whole story is filled with outside opinion. And every one of them, every one of the opinions in this story was unnecessary. Gus reminded us of this last week, that long before this, that Jesus had set his face, and I love this term, Jesus had set his face like flint to Jerusalem. And you know, his followers didn't know why. Perhaps they thought it was a pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the Passover, like so many other Jewish people would be doing at this time. But you see, Jesus hadn't just set his face to Jerusalem. Jesus had set his face to his own arrest and his own suffering and ultimately to his own death. Many of you know that this morning is the morning that we celebrate Palm Sunday. It's the day that Jesus and his closest followers entered into Jerusalem. And the Jewish people knew about Jesus already. Jesus had been traveling. He'd been throughout the country for 3 years now, and he was healing sicknesses. Jesus was driving out demons. Jesus had even raised some people from the dead. And so they knew about him. And so when they entered Jerusalem, Jesus and his followers, they were met with a great celebration. All four of the Gospels tell us about this amazing event. Riding on a donkey, people were laying palm branches down, and they were laying out their own outer clothing down on the ground as Jesus passed by, and they were shouting, "Hosanna! Glory to God in the highest! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." As they entered in, this was a reception that was truly fit for a king. But you know what? Jesus knew all of this was only temporary. Because Jesus hadn't only seen the beginning of this week. Jesus had also seen the end of this week. And he knew everything that was in between that was going to happen. And Jesus hadn't just set his face to Jerusalem. Jesus had set his face like flint to the end of the week. All of this was going to happen. No matter how weak or how powerful the people were, no matter who had an opinion against it, all of this was going to happen. The gang's opinion was unnecessary. The government's opinion was unnecessary. Even Galilee's opinion was unnecessary, because the only opinion that mattered in this whole story, the only opinion that was necessary in any of this, was God's opinion. And it was his opinion from the very beginning. The passage from Isaiah that we started earlier goes on to say this: he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. And like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, he opened not his mouth. And yet it was the will. Let me say that again. Yet it was the will of the Lord to crush him. He has put him to grief. When his soul makes an offering for guilt, he shall see his offspring. He shall prolong his days. The will of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. And the fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy would be given the stamp of approval when an angel appears to a man named Joseph in a dream, and he tells him, you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. Jesus saves. Jesus saves, and that's what he did, and that's what he was doing all along during his ministry, and he was saving people from their sicknesses, he was saving people from demons, and he was saving people even from death, and saving is what he still today continues to do. Jesus' whole purpose was to affect the people, his people, you and I, the people who would accept him as their king, and who would carry on his work, and who would impact other people, who would also write to tell even more others about it. God's opinion was the only opinion that was necessary that first Easter week. But now I believe your opinion matters too. Because your opinion is what's going to drive you to make a decision to learn more about Jesus and begin to know more about him, begin to walk with him. And your opinion is going to drive you to make the decision about whether you're going to believe in him and become a closer follower of his. And your opinion, is what's going to help you to decide whether you're going to invite someone else to come in here more about Jesus so that they also could love Jesus the same way that you do and in turn build his kingdom with us. The true kingdom, not an earthly kingdom. The true spiritual kingdom. And we can build it even stronger. And I hope you'll do it. I hope you'll do it today. Before this feeling in your heart leaves and before this opportunity that you have today, it passes by. I hope that you'll do it. God bless you.